A1.
Number 6B.
You know so well, say, that a color, like gray or white or black, that the color doesn't really exist. There is no such thing in the world as a color. All that exists, as far as we know today, is a light wave. A light wave of a certain length. And if it has a certain length, it takes on a certain... You know that the light, which the white light, which contains all the various colors, that if that is split up through the glass prism, you get the whole spectrum of all the various colors. So what a color really is just a fraction of a light wave. But there is no such a thing as a green light or a green color. What is green is nothing else but our reaction to a certain light wave. You see, the eye is built so that the image of things, they are projected onto the retina at the back of our eye. Then that retina of our eye reacts on these light waves, on the various lengths of light waves in a different way, and transmits that reaction of a wave, not of a color, of a wave, through the optic nerve to the brain. And the brain reacts on that light wave by producing a certain feeling, which it calls color. So really, there is no such thing as an eye seeing. Really, the brain sees from the human standpoint. The eye doesn't see. The eye transmits its reaction into the brain, and the brain really transforms it to varied reactions. One is called red, the other green, the other blue, and so on. So there is no such an object which, say, is green, like a leaf. We say a leaf is green, but it isn't. It's everything else but green. First of all, you know, we conceive of it as green because that leaf reflects always all those light waves which we then consider as green. All the other light waves are absorbed by the leaf, except those light waves which we call green. So a leaf is everything else but green in itself. And because those light waves which are green are reflected back to our eye and then transmolded and transformed in our brain by the reaction and be called green, we call that leaf green. But it is everything else but green. And you see how green, therefore, is no quality of an object. It's what we attribute to the object. So again, you can see how deceptive the whole system of our five physical senses is. Or consider something else about the eye. You know that the universe, really, when taken from the physical standpoint, that the universe is full of electronic magnetic radiation. extending really from what you call cosmic rays with a wavelength of only 1/1,000,000,000 of a centimeter up to infinitely long radio waves. See, the whole universe is full of waves with the range of the cosmic rays, which are the very, very small waves, up to the other end of the scale, to the long, long radio waves. And out of this enormous range, the human eye selects only a very, very narrow band of these waves. Very, very narrow band. They say that the visible light, that light which is really transformed in our eye, that selects only 1/40,000,000,000 part of the known extent of nature's mighty gamut of ether waves. So if we look into the universe with our eyes only really transform 1/40,000,000,000 part of all the waves that exist in the universe. And so we realize the very limited range of our perception. And we can see, therefore, that with our eye, we don't see everything. Now, think of another example, which I have made up for myself. What on earth has decided that our eye should just take in and work only with that very, very little band of light waves? Why not those who are just next to it, like the X-rays? See, the X-ray waves are of the same nature as the light waves. They are not different. They only differ in wavelength. That's all they differ. Well, let us say that our eye would be built so that they would only take in the X-rays and not the light rays. What a universe would we have? I would just see skeletons sitting around here. You see? I would see you as skeletons and never as colors. Well, the other one who would have an eye like we have would say, I don't see any skeleton at all. They have plenty of flesh on their bones. And you can see those rosy cheeks and so on. And I would say, from my point of view, I don't know what you're talking about. What is flesh? I can't see any flesh. I just see bones. What are you talking about? Colors? What is that? See, now what would be true? See, it's our organs of perception that are built now in a way, but they are not built in a way which would be able to receive all the possible ways of looking at things. And so again we can see how limited our sense organs are. Well, what is the practical consequence? To state it again, we can see that really the material world is not an objective reality. The material world is just not an objective reality. The way we see things is an illusion, is a deception. We never see things as they are. We always see them the way our sense organs are constructed and how they react on those various waves. And you know very well that those who are colorblind see a red line as green and the green line as red or anything like that. And really, as far as I know, 1 out of 10 is colorblind. So we can also draw another consequence, that as each one sees the world in the way as his mentality, as his consciousness is built up, everyone has a different view on the world. And that's the reason why, really, so many of us can live in the same world, and the one is happy in it, and the other one is unhappy in it. The one is confident in it, and the other one just dreads it. But it's the same world. It's the same world. So, let us fix in our consciousness that it is really the subject that determines the object, and not the other way around. That not an object can tell us what it is so that we can make it subjective to ourselves. It is, as Dunyu would say, the scale of observation which creates the phenomena. Or as Mrs. Eddy has said it long ago, she said, mortal mind produces its own phenomena. It isn't so that the phenomena exist and that we can perceive it as what it is. It's always that we have a mortal state of consciousness which varies from one to the other, and that mortal state of consciousness produces its own phenomena. And then, as Mrs. Eddy goes on, and then charges them to something else. Like a kitten glancing into the mirror at itself and thinking it sees another kitten. A kitten who cannot think logically looks into a mirror, and because the kitten has no scientific knowledge, no understanding, it only reacts according to the sense testimony and therefore believes that it sees another kitten in the mirror. And that's what we do in life. We encounter phenomena, either good or bad, and we think that they exist by themselves, not knowing that we really produce them, that they are just as much as we make them to be. See, by itself, nothing is good or bad. It is thinking that makes it so. I think that's from Shakespeare somehow. I may have not quoted it very correctly, but the meaning of it is like that. So we begin to realize another great proposition in metaphysics, namely that things are resolved into thoughts, that objects are really resolved into a subjective state. Now this is very important. Before we really can change the world, we first have to see that we resolve the so-called objective world into thought. Actually, today, in this century, we are at the end of a very long inquest into the nature of so-called objective reality. With Einstein we have come to the end of an inquest that has started long before Jesus' time with the Greek philosophers. You know, perhaps I give you a short account of how through the centuries one has seen that there is no objective reality in an object. If you go back right to the 4th century BC, to the Greek philosopher called Democritus, he already stated the following thing. He said, sweet and bitter, cold and warm, as well as all the colors, all these things exist but in opinion and not in reality. In other words, 2,400 years ago, they already knew that these qualities, like sweet and bitter, cold and warm, and the colors, do not exist in the object, but only in the observing subject, that they were subjective and not objective. And 2,400 years ago, I think only one out of a million realizes that. All the rest of humanity, after 2,400 years, still thinks and is convinced that these qualities are qualities inherent in an object. You see what Mrs. Eddy meant. Unwillingness to learn all things rightly binds Christendom with chains. It is the unwillingness to let science inform our sentiments that binds us. If we would be willing to let science, the fourth side of the holy city, govern our consciousness, we would have woken up long ago. But still today, after such a long time, we believe the same thing as Adam believed. Galileo, at the beginning of the 17th century, also was aware of this purely subjective character of sense qualities like color, taste, smell, and sound. And he pointed out in his writings that they can no more be ascribed to the external objects than can the tickling or the pain caused sometimes by touching such objects. He said, color is not a quality inherent in an object, just as the tickling is not inherent in an object. There are no certain substances which can tickle us when we touch them. We tickle ourselves. Because if, say, a fly walks over it, the fly doesn't get tickled by that object. So the object doesn't tickle. It is we that react on an object as ticklish. And so he said, in the same way, it is we that attribute to an object to be cold or warm or sweet or sour or anything like that. A contemporary of Galileo was Leibniz, a very well-known German philosopher and mathematician. He discovered the calculus of infinity, and these things, a very great thinker. And he too said, I am able to prove that not only light, color, heat, and the like, but motion, shape, and extension, too, are mere apparent qualities. So, 300 years ago, you see, Leibniz already showed through science that even motion, shape, and extension of an object are not qualities inherent in that object, but are only apparent qualities, that we alone attribute such qualities to them. And yet today we still think that motion and shape and extension are inherent qualities of a object. Well, finally came Einstein. I mean, when you take away from an object color, warm or being cold, sweet or sour, take away the shape, the motion, the extension, what is still left? There is nothing much left anymore. You see, what happens with that object is nearly the same thing as what happens with the Cheshire cat, you see. Begins to disappear until finally only the grin is left. And Einstein even took away the grin from matter, because Einstein really carried this train of logic to its ultimate limit, namely by showing that even space and time are forms, as it says, of intuition, which can no more be divorced from consciousness than can our concept of color, shape, or size. See, we all believe that we live in a world which has space and time. All we do from morning to night is to believe in this space-time concept of a world. And he comes and says, but there is no such a thing as space and time. They don't exist. The only place where they exist is in our consciousness. And only there are forms of intuition. They are not forms of reality. So he says, space and time have no objective reality, no independent existence. And then finally, he goes a step further and shows that matter and energy even are interchangeable, are indistinguishable. Really, that matter can be regarded as energy, and energy can be regarded as matter. It just depends from which standpoint we look at it. From which stand we look at it, we know that the physicist who is concerned with the electrons and so on, that they can look at matter from two different points of view. From one point of view, they can consider matter as little quanta, you see, tiny little quanta flying around with terrific speed, I think with the speed of light, nearly with the speed of light. Or you can look at the same thing from another scale of observation. All what you see are waves. And waves, again, are only a figure, a symbol of our imagination to express really something, because there is no such thing in reality as a wave. Now, what is the lesson these physicists and philosophers have drawn from these observations? They say two things about it. First, they say every object is simply the sum of its qualities. So they reduce an object to qualities. Then, as a second point, they say, since qualities exist only in the mind, you see, the whole objective universe of matter and energy, atoms and stars, does not exist except as a construction of the consciousness. They are just an edifice of conventional symbols shaped by the senses of men. Now, can you see the logic? I want to show it again, you see. First, we begin to realize that an object has no objective reality as such, that it is just the sum of qualities, of its qualities. But these qualities do not exist inherently in the object, but they exist in the observer, in mind, in the observing mind. And therefore, they are only constructions of our consciousness. And in this way, physics has shown over centuries and centuries that there exists nothing like an objective reality, material reality, but that things must be resolved into thought, and that they exist just in thought. I don't know if you know a man called Sir James Jeans. He was a very well-known physicist and philosopher, with a Nobel Prize winner, and in one of his books which he wrote, he said, "The world resembles more to a great thought than to a great machine." See, we have still today a concept of the world as an enormous, exact machine. But that's only when we look at it through the lens of our five physical senses. When we let scientific reasoning, even natural scientific reasoning, govern our testimony of the five physical senses, we begin to see that it is more a great thought than a great machine. He says, "All matter is made of waves, and we live in a world of waves. Matter and energy are interchangeable." So, with this explication on the nature of matter, how far we really could consider matter as real and independent of consciousness, we can see that modern scientific discovery come closer and closer to revelation, closer and closer to that what the Bible and the great seers of biblical times have seen long ago, namely that matter is only a state of mortal consciousness, that really our consciousness defines the object and not the other way around. So we can ask ourselves now the great question, what sort of consciousness therefore should we have? If everything is subjective, then naturally the question is, well, can everyone look at things as he likes? Or is there a consciousness which really comes nearer to reality than another consciousness? Can we look at things just the way we like? Or have we to put on a certain lens of consciousness through which we look at things? Well, Paul already was interested in this question. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, he says, "For now we see through a glass darkly." See, through a consciousness of mistiness, of a misunderstanding, of ignorance. "But then, face to face," he says, "but afterwards we look with a consciousness of true identity." Whenever the Bible speaks about faith, it means identity. And when it speaks about face to face, it means when we are identical with the true identity of being, with God. "Then we look face to face. Now," he says, "I know in part." As long as we only look into the universe through the human consciousness, we only know reality in part. "But then shall I know even as also I am known." He says, when I look face to face, when I look with a consciousness that is identical with God, then I shall know me as God knows me, as I really are. Then I know reality. You see, Moses, he already was interested in this question too, because it is written from Moses that Moses had to put a veil over his face, that the children of Israel could not steadfastly look to the end of that which is abolished. But their minds were blinded, for until this day remaineth the same veil untaken away in the reading of the Old Testament, which veil is done away in Christ. He began to see that until we don't have the Christ consciousness, that then our consciousness is veiled, has a veil put on it. That unless we begin to see, to look into reality with that consciousness which is at one with God, in spiritual agreement with God, we don't look rightly. We look through a mistiness, through a glass darkly, through a veil, and therefore see things only half true, half real. So we begin to realize that the solution really lies in putting on a new consciousness. That all depends what consciousness do I have. If I have a divine consciousness, then naturally I create my own phenomena. I produce divine phenomena. If I have a mortal consciousness, I always produce mortal phenomena.